Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the Revis and Butthead podcast. In this episode, I am joined, as always, by my co-host, Hussein. In this episode, we are going to go through our top five edge rushers in the 2022 NFL draft. We are going to give you a little breakdown of why we think and why we ranked our edge rushers the way we did. And at the end, we'll go into which players were in our just miss category. And with all that said, Hussein, I think you should kick it off. We're going to start with your number five edge rusher. So Hussein, who is it?
All right, let's roll, baby. Number five. This is probably a shocker considering how much he's rising. I have Trayvon Walker. A lot of people have him like rising up to like number two or three pick in the draft. I just didn't see it. Trayvon Walker, 6'5", 270. And let's be real, the reason he's number five on my board, the reason he's rising on everyone's board is his combine, his testing. He was 80th percentile or above in literally everything. He has like the second best ever raw athletic score for defensive ends behind Myles Garrett. But when you watch the tape, you just don't see enough to justify a guy going top three, top five, top 10 as a draft pick. He's phenomenal in the run game. He's really good in the run game, and that's really important. But I just don't love what I saw, pass rush-wise. It just kind of looked unplanned. A lot of his sacks were cleanup or, you know, forced pressure from other guys, led the quarterback into his arms. He just doesn't do enough as a pass rusher. He has the upside, of course. Like, I could be totally wrong about this. He's drafted into the right spot. He could be probably one of the best players of this draft because of his athletic ability. But he just didn't show enough in college to justify – going, you know, top 10.
Okay. Who's your player comp for him?
Oh, this was a tough one. First of all, player comps for edges were so difficult.
Tell me about it. I think I left one or two blank by accident. So I'll try to come up with something on the fly.
So for this one, I had a bigger and faster Trey Flowers. Because Trey Flowers, strong, really strong run defender. He plays inside and out, just like Trayvon Walker. I know Salo will value that versatility that Walker brings, but he's really good at like run defense and like his like flexibility, but he's just not good enough pass rush wise. And I see a little bit of Flowers with that.
Okay. I think you brought up a lot of good points about Walker, and I'll get into him in a little bit, but with my number five edge rusher, I had Boye Mafe from Minnesota, 6'3", 261 pounds. So just going through his tape, something I uncovered very quickly is that he is very fast off the line of scrimmage, and he's not a snap timer either. He's not anticipating the snap like you see Aiden Hutchinson doing so well, but he has elite get off, and you can see from his mock draftables profile, he just everything when it comes to anything speed related, he's elite at, but he falls very short in terms of arm length and wingspan and length. So as he projects to the next level, he's going to be mainly a speed rusher. He's going to be mainly a situational pass rusher. But the reason why I have him at number five is because I believe he can be truly an elite situational edge rusher at the next level, as long as he's able to develop some counter moves in the NFL. Speaking of counter moves, I really didn't see many of them on tape. He's always going to win by speed. He did something a little unique that I haven't seen another edge rusher do on tape. And that thing is that he likes to use the same like chop move repeatedly. Like he looks like he's swimming with one arm, essentially. Like he just like if he can't get the lineman's hands off of his chest plate, he just keeps doing the same rip or swim chop move thing, and it's unique. I haven't seen it before, but it works, honestly, and he can be pretty aggressive. He can be pretty quick with it. So with that said, that's why I have him as my number five edge rusher. And in terms of pro comparison, I see he was a little difficult to think of, But when it came down to it, just because his get off is so elite, I compared him to Brian Burns, maybe not as good as a run defender as Burns is, but they were both elite get off after the snap. First step explosiveness, it was all there. So I think the comp kind of lives up to expectations a little bit.
Boye Mafe, I really like it. He got a lot of consideration for me. Putting together his top five was not easy. You told me a few days ago that we should do a top 10. I'm like, no way. And I really started watching. I'm like, wow, I could put together 10 names pretty easily right now. It would have taken a lot more work, but probably could have put together 10 names. I really like him. Boye Mafe was actually on my just miss list. I watched him a lot, and I do agree with you. He also showed out at the Senior Bowl.
He did. Now, I went into very, very in-depth detail on how he performed in the Senior Bowl game. If you want to go take a listen, that is episode one, but I'm not going to repeat any of it. But I really tried to stick with what I saw on tape for this evaluation. And after the fact, just I kind of used his Senior Bowl as a little bit of a leg up on the rest of the people who were in my can't miss. So that's kind of the reason why he was in my top five while others weren't able to make it. So on that note, Usain, moving right along, number four, who you got for us?
Number quattro. I don't know if this will shock you or not. It's a guy that I've avidly told you I love. Kingsley Enagbare, the edge rusher from South Carolina. So one thing I do when I look at edge rushers, kind of the first thing I do is I look at either you have great get offs, which shows, you know, great explosiveness, or you have really long arms. Kingsley Enagbare has really long arms. He's 87th percentile in the arm length and wingspan. So the big tape that I kind of focused on was him against Georgia, because I know both of their offensive linemen are, you know, draftable. Something about Kingsley Enagbare, I've said this before, he was given the highest pass rush grade by PFF from the SEC since Myles Garrett. That's kind of crazy to me. I mean, there's been so many edge rushers come out of the SEC, and just pass rush grade wise, it's been since Myles Garrett, it's just been him at the highest. He's really quick. He uses his arms really well. He's got a great swim move, but there's really some stuff about him. Like, he's a liability in the run game, a straight up liability. You can't trust him in the run game, but I think because of that, he's more of a fit as a 4-3 defensive end, which is more of what we need. You know, if you ask him to play 3-4 outside linebacker, yeah, you're in trouble. But I think he's a great 4-3 defensive end. He's definitely a big finesse guy than power guy. He uses his arms. He uses swim moves. He even throws in the occasional spin move. Kingsley Enagbare, my number four. I think he'd be a great, kind of like you said, Boye Mafe, a great situational pass rusher. I think maybe good for the Jets if they go like Sauce and wide receiver 4 and 10, because he's the kind of guy who can play on third downs. You don't want him on first and second down, but with the amount of depth they've accumulated on the D-line, he's perfect to be that third down pass rushing specialist as a rookie. Maybe if you can get that run defense better, you can play more. But right now I see him as a third down player. The comp for this one took a while because I'm like, who am I going with? I went with Romeo Okawara from Detroit. Yeah, that's an interesting one. I see you nodding your head. Okawara, okay. He's the guy who took a while to burst into the NFL. And then when he did, he played well as a 4-3 edge rusher. This year, they moved him to 3-4 outside linebacker with the scheme. His production fell off a cliff, kind of like what I would think would happen if you put Kingsley Enagbare in a 3-4 scheme.
That's a fair pro comparison. I don't know if my mind would have went to Romeo Okawara, though.
I was struggling.
He's a hard comp, though. He really is. It's a hard comp. In my evaluation, and he was in my just miss. Honestly, I could have probably treated him as a 5B, 5A type situation with him and Mafe, but I don't know. I don't even have a pro comp for him right now in my notes. I couldn't think of one. He was one of the players that I really struggled with, but honestly, at the end of the day, I think it comes down to which player has length, coming with speed, can dominate as a situational edge rusher immediately in his rookie year. And that's probably the pro player I would probably lean towards in a comparison. But going on to my number four edge rusher, you said it yourself, Usain, already. I have Trayvon Walker here at number four. He's 6'5", 272 pounds. He is a behemoth of a man. I mean, just huge. And I didn't take it into account his godlike testing during the combine, but like those are just straight up alien numbers of what he did. Like what he did was probably one of what happened at the combine in terms of athletic profiles. But going into the tape, and what I saw on the positive side was he has really powerful hands. You see the linemen, the shock that goes through their body when he makes impact on his punches and his on his hand placement, and they can be stunned backwards at times. It's that powerful, and because of that, he's able to dominate in short yardage situations. He may not be the most elite at that in the NFL, but I think my mind always goes to the play back way back. I think it was when the Jets played the Browns, and this is a little bit of a throwback, but when Snacks Harrison, it was like third or fourth and one, and Damon Harrison was able to put one arm on the, I think it was the center and the left guard or the right guard. And he was able to just control that both of them with one arm, and he was able to make the stop. So that's kind of the play I see in Trayvon Walker. It's elite level run defending, and he explodes out low out of his stance. He's really hard to block like that. Like as someone who's 6'5" and as lanky as him, he comes out of his stance really low to the ground. Like it's shocking how low he is. And that's kind of the things that stood out to me on tape. He has a really high motor and effort, kind of like how Hussein alluded to earlier. A lot of his production was cleanup. That's because of the high effort. But that also is because he has no pass rush plan. He doesn't really get how to set up tackles throughout the game. So that's just something he's going to have to develop at the next level. He's number four on my list because of that, despite his freakish athletic profile and his ability to stop the run. But just going into the negatives, I watched the Alabama game. I wanted to see him have the ability to at least to look competitive against Neil. And at least the Alabama game I watched, Neil controlled him all game. There really wasn't many situations where Trayvon Walker had some obvious wins. But outside of that, he's huge and lanky, like you said. He can play inside and outside. And a lot of his reps, they weren't really necessarily pinning your ears back and getting after the quarterback. A lot of his reps were he's just going to use his length, place his hand high up near the neck of the offensive lineman, stay low, and just kind of keep him away of their off his body and just use him to read where the ball carrier is going or where the quarterback goes. And he just shows them left or right, depending where they go. And that was his role at Georgia. So with all that said, Hussein, I hope you like my pro comparison for him, but in terms of his ability to translate to the NFL, I want to stress that not as a college player, but what I see him doing immediately in his first year, I comped him to Shaq Lawson, great run defender, not much there in terms of a pass rush plan. He'll get you some sacks with some effort and a high motor, but if he can develop that pass rush plan, he could be truly dangerous. But it's just not there right now.
That's a good one. I didn't think of Shaq Lawson. I was just kind of, when I went with my player comp for him, is I was just kind of going off his, versatility and all the stuff he does. So I have a question. Would you draft Trayvon Walker at 10?
Trayvon Walker at 10? You'd have to tell me how the board goes at 4. Like, if we... like, let's say we go Ikwanu at 4, since he's like the only really other name that I can see happening. Like, I don't think Sauce is happening as much as I love him.
Yeah. Say we go Ikwanu at 4.
If the pick is Ikwanu at 4 and he drops to 10, I'd have to think about it. I would honestly think about it, but I think my mind would turn immediately towards wide receiver instead. I think if that was the case, I would rather package my second rounder and maybe a late rounder and try to move up in the first round to have my pick of whichever edge rusher is there in that next tier below the Hutch, Thibodeau, Trayvon Walker, Jermaine Johnson kind of tier of edge rushers. So I think that would be my preferred course of action. I don't think I would take him at 10 ultimately.
Okay. Interesting. I think for Trayvon Walker, he's got like, as an overall player, he's got a pretty high floor because of his athletic traits and his run defense. But as a pass rusher, his floor is pretty low. And that's like if you're drafting a pass rusher inside the top 10, you have to be like confident you're trying to get a double digit sack guy. And I just don't know about that.
And plus, something I'd like to throw in is that this is a pick that you want to make when you have a new coaching staff and regime coming in, when you have the time to let the kid develop over the next 2 or 3 years. Because even most high profile prospects as edge rushers, they typically don't usually figure it out until their second or third year. Obviously, minus the Myles Garretts, the Bosas of the world, but most players take a couple years to figure it out. And that's when prospects are able to show a little juice in the pass rush game in college. And with Trayvon Walker, it's really bare. You really don't see it. And he's going to need a good potentially 3 or 4 years to reach that type of ceiling if he can get there. And as a team like the Texans or the Lions, who just hired in coaching staffs, they can have the patience to let him come in, stop the run, and just figure it out over the next 3 or 4 years and hope he can hit that ceiling. Because if he can hit that ceiling, he's going to be a top five edge rusher in the NFL. And he's got the highest ceiling out of everybody on this in this class. But yeah, it's also the biggest bust potential. Like this pick can get you fired. So yeah, that's totally kind of where I stand.
Mm-hmm. Totally agree there. So number three, I know this is one of your favorite guys, so I'm not going to get too crazy into it. Jermaine Johnson, 6'4", 254 pounds, 66th percentile in arm length and wingspan, 90th percentile 40-yard dash and broad jump. So something I saw about Jermaine Johnson, boy, this dude sets the edge. Like, forget anything he does as a pass rusher. You are not running outside runs against him. If you have a scrambling quarterback, you are not getting outside against him. And that really mattered to me because we're in a division with Josh Allen. We're in a conference with Deshaun Watson and Russell Wilson. Patrick Mahomes even runs. We're in a division conference with Lamar Jackson. Like, it's a rushing quarterback age. And Jermaine Johnson does not let the quarterback get outside. And I've really focused on the UNC game because of Sam Howell. Sam Howell is a rushing quarterback. He had like double-digit touchdowns this year. And he really did not let Sam Howell run his way the entire game. He did not do much as a pass rusher that game, but he did not let any runs get outside of him. He did not let Sam Howell run outside of him. But I saw something from Jermaine Johnson I didn't really like, and it's not his fault. It was the scheme. He stunted a lot more than I would have preferred. I didn't really get to see way too many true one-on-one reps for him. A lot of it was him playing inside, him stunting. All I wanted to see was him get after the quarterback one-on-one with the tackle, and I never really got to see it. That's why I really kind of went back to the Senior Bowl and I watched a lot of his Senior Bowl reps, and they were just much improved, because Senior Bowl is just straight you versus the guy across from you, you win. And that's all he did at the Senior Bowl, like we mentioned earlier. So I was really impressed with his improvement there, but I don't know more so if you call it an improvement versus saying he was just given the opportunity to. Another one I really wanted to look at was versus NC State, because obviously the tackle for NC State is Ikem Ekwonu. I was telling you about this. I'm like, man, I wish they had just put Jermaine Johnson and Ekwonu up against each other all game just so I could watch them both at once.
That would make life so much easier, wouldn't it? Especially as you're watching these players. Oh, my God.
That makes life so much easier. Something I really thought was interesting is that even Ekwonu, who's seen as by far probably the best tackle in this class, best run-blocking tackle in this class, Ekwonu had trouble handling him in the run game. That's how good of a run defender he is. And we know how much Robert Saleh and Joe Douglas have said, we need to fix our run defense. I think he would be a great start. Pass rushing is still kind of a work in progress. I think he is going to give you probably, I don't think he's going to be like a perennial 12 sack guy, but I think he will give you 8 to 10 sacks a year, along with just being a very smart, all around good football player who doesn't make mistakes. So for the pro comparison, I gave him Jalen Phillips without the injury history.
That's interesting. You're going very recent, huh?
Yeah, I mean, dude, edge rusher pro comparisons are not easy, okay?
They're not easy. I mean, wide receivers, everyone can name a comp for a receiver. But once you get to edge rushers, it gets a little harder. Just wait until you get to, like, linebackers or so I don't know. I don't know how to compare linebackers.
If you ask me to give a pro comp for a guard, I think I'm just never doing this podcast again.
Honestly, I don't think I could even give a comp for a guard. I just call it like it is what I see on tape. That's just how I kind of roll. But I'm very thankful you didn't go on too long about Jermaine Johnson, because I'm gonna have to talk about him now because he's my number three edge rusher. He's 6'4",
wow.
254 pounds. He really takes on low blockers while on the edge, and that includes when he has pulling linemen trying to get low and block him. He can kind of push him away and shrug him off easily. I saw some advanced moves that I really enjoyed watching, especially against NC State on Iguanu. He had a really good club swim move, nice combination move. Those are the types of moves that I look for on tape on edge rushers. Those are the more high level and high quality wins, as opposed to just beating someone with pure speed or power. But you said it yourself. He made Iguanu completely whiff on a. There was one play against NC State where he made Iguanu completely whiff on a run block. Iguanu didn't even get his hands on him. It was that bad. Just, it was instant. And usually when he wins fast. It's right off the line of scrimmage, which when you are evaluating edge rushers, you want to see, obviously you want to see a high motor and high effort and to see them keep working towards the quarterback, but you also need to see them win fast, because winning fast gets productive sacks on the quarterback, and that can kill drives. The Jets need drive stoppers, and we need someone who can win fast. But going into that more, he's really aggressive with his hands, and I like that. He has violent hands. I'd like to see him. I would like to see him convert speed to power a little quicker when he doesn't realize when he's going to lose with speed. Because I saw him take a little more time to convert the power. But I just want to say that in terms of Iguanu, he's supposed to be this big, powerful guy. He also got bull rushed pretty good by Jermaine Johnson. Now, he didn't get a sack on the play, but Iguanu, if he went one more step, he would have probably stepped on the quarterback's toes. He was that close. But I'm pretty sure the ball got out. And Jermaine Johnson is one of my favorite players in this draft. Now, to go again, I just have one con negative on Jermaine Johnson on the NC State game, and that's just he tried to win with speed around Iguanu, lost balance, and he just got completely gatored by Iguanu. And look, it happens when you try to win with speed, you lose balance, but it's something to note. So, but you said it a lot yourself. I didn't really want to talk about it a whole lot with the run defense, but something I also liked in terms of his football IQ is that he is able to recognize play action, especially when the quarterback goes into boot. And in an era where we're seeing a lot more West Coast schemes spreading around the NFL, the play action boot is a staple in that kind of offense. So having an edge that can identify that and get to the quarterback quickly and put pressure is really important. And play action boot, if you can shut down that game, that ruins the passing attack, that feeds off the run game, and that can destroy an offensive game plan. So I liked what I saw there. And another thing I liked from what I saw is that just another advanced move is he was able to execute a push pull. So it sounds exactly what it is. You push into the lineman, like you're bull rushing. And then a second later you plant your foot, and then you pull him towards you into the side of you to throw him down or throw him off balance. And this is really effective on rushers who like to convert speed to power, and they do it a lot. And it's a way to set up tackles throughout a game where if you continuously rush with speed and then you convert to power into a bull rush, if you do that nonstop from the first quarter to the fourth quarter, the tackle is going to start adjusting. And then you hit them with the good old push pull move, and you're going to have them flopping around off balance. And that's something that you want to see in an edge rusher, have the ability to set up the offensive tackle throughout the game to win later. And that's where you get the clutch stops. I just want to add in, I like that you brought up the stunts thing, because I didn't understand it. He was not getting any production. I did not get any view of, or any sliver of production from him being the looper on a stunt, and they just kept doing it. I don't know why. It was honestly a waste. But like, they did it. He didn't have much production. I don't want to see him doing stunts, and I'm pretty sure that Salah doesn't do stunts really, maybe on early downs, but once it's third down, everyone's rushing in a straight line, getting upfield. So One thing I would like to see him incorporate, though, is he explodes out of his stance so low, very similar to Trayvon Walker. And because of that, I want to see him use a forklift move where usually when you're lower than the lineman, they stick their arms out and it's above you. So obviously when I call it a forklift move, what you do is if you're the edge rusher, you take your both hands, you make contact with their elbows and you push up. And then usually you combine that with some sort of rip move or swim to get past him. And if you explode out of your stance that low, I want to see that move incorporated as well as his other array of, and his toolbox of other pass rush moves. But going into the pro comparison for Jermaine Johnson, I have two players listed. The first player being Preston Smith. I think he wins with quality moves. He's not really so much of a speed rusher. He's more of a technician. And Johnson is also kind of more on the technician side as opposed to a speed rusher. But he's also good against the run. Jermaine Johnson is very great against the run. The other name I have is Danielle Hunter. Danielle Hunter, he was very athletic coming out of college, but he didn't have the technique developed yet, but he was able to put it together. Jermaine Johnson, in that case, you didn't see it on his tape, but he showed flashes of it because he wasn't asked to pin his ears back and get after the quarterback a whole lot. He was asked to wear a whole lot of hats. And because of that, there are some questions about his ability to know all the techniques, but I think the Senior Bowl kind of put that to rest just because he was able to show a whole lot more advanced moves. So those are the two players that came to my mind watching Jermaine Johnson.
Nice. I like it. I think Jermaine Johnson gives you a good floor as a, you know, consistent three down player. And I think you could see a lot more production out of him if he just gets to rush the passer, not to do dumb things like stunt. So moving on to my number two, I think it's pretty obvious where we're going at this point. Kayvon Thibodeau, 6'4", 250 pounds out of Oregon. This is a little bit against my grain. He's only 35th percentile in arm length and wingspan, but he's 90th percentile, 40-yard dash, his 10-yard split, his bench press. I have been a big KT fan for a long time, and I'm just going to, you know, get it pretty clear. The off-field stuff does not concern me. He's a guy who just likes his brand and likes himself, and there's really nothing wrong with that. I think, honestly, it's a great mentality for him to have. He's playing in New York. You need to have, you know, thick skin, and he's kind of dealt with that in the draft process. You know, he was asked at his pro day, like, what is the most ridiculous, you know, knock against you that you've heard? And because we've heard some crazy things, and he said that I'm not the number one player in this class. So that just kind of goes to show, I really like that. That's the confidence you need to play in New York. And getting to the player, this is a guy for 3 years now has just been seen, you know, top three pick, top three pick, top three pick. And the tape backed it up for the last 3 years. So what happened? Realistically, people got bored. So going into what he showed on film, I really focused on the UCLA game for one, because that was the game where like everyone's like, wow, you know, this is a KT takeover. I actually wrote down when I was watching, I legitimately lost count in the amount of QB pressures and hits this man had that game. He's quick. He's fast. He doesn't have a wide array of pass rush moves, but realistically nobody coming out of college has that. You can say that about almost every person when they come out of college. They're just like, their pass rush moves are like, they got like two or three really good ones, but they've got to get a few more. And KT is kind of the same way. He had a play, actually, fourth down, gambling like a minute left, and UCLA's driving down by three. He got triple teamed, and he still got a pressure on the QB, forced him out of the pocket, and forced a throw away. So he's just, I think he constantly wins. He shows enough as a run defender. He's not elite in it by any means, but he's a good enough run defender to get by, to, you know, leave him on the field on first and second down. And I think he has the potential to be a 12-sack guy in the NFL consistently off the edge. And let's be real, when we're the Jets and we haven't had that in 20 years, we're not complaining about that. The player comp I gave him was Max Crosby. And now, you know, really strong coming out of college, average run defender, great pass rusher off the gate. I'm pretty sure Max Crosby had double-digit sacks his first year in the NFL. Max Crosby this year, his sack number was only 8.5, but he was like top three in quarterback pressures, quarterback hits. He just, his one job, get after the quarterback, nothing else matters. And I think that's what we would do with Kayvon Thibodeau, and I think he would really exceed in that role with the Jets.
Yeah, just let this guy pin his ears back and get after the quarterback. And I do like your pro comp. Now, I'm going to keep this short because I also have Kayvon Thibodeaux as my number two.
Are we going to have identical top threes?
I think we are, honestly. I think it's been established for a very long time, though. I think the only change in my top five was that I had Jermaine slotted behind Kayvon, even though I had him above him for a while. But just going into what I saw with Thibodeaux, again, he's another edge rusher in the top five that has powerful hands. He has great get off. I saw him use a club swim combo move. It went for a sack, which is a high quality move to use in a win like that. And something that is different and better than Jermaine Johnson is that he shows elite power when he loops on stunts. So he's able to really make contact and drive that blocker backwards. And he's got legit speed to power conversion. He does it. He converts at the right time. He gets offensive linemen off balance. And another thing I like about his ability to rush is that he shows the ability to alter his rush path based off of where the QB is going in the pocket, whether he steps up or he rolls out left, right, or whatever. He shows the ability to adjust and retrace and find the ball somehow. So, in addition, I went and watched the tape against USC in 2020 because I wanted to watch him against AVT. And no bueno for AVT. So, yeah. So, essentially, AVT seemed to have a pretty decent handle on him for the first few quarters of the game. But, again, it's a skill that I talked about with Jermaine Johnson. I'll talk about soon is that he shows the ability to set up tackles throughout the game. And he was showing AVT bull rush and he crossed his face inside a lot early in the game. And then late in the game in the third quarter, he just burns AVT on a speed rush outside to sack the quarterback. And he didn't do it just once, but he did it twice. He completely killed the drive for USC. And I just have in my notes, he's a drive stopper. Because he can string together wins and he can do that just himself. And that's kind of the ceiling that the Jets need in a player in this draft. And they just need someone who could take over and just win. But the one thing I do want to say is that the whole effort thing, I didn't see it in his 2020 tape, but I could sort of see it in 2021. It didn't pop up often. I honestly really saw it a lot in the championship game, but against Utah. And I think that may have been because they lost so bad. But it's not something you really want to see. I didn't see it a lot though, so I don't really want to kill him for it. And just overall, I watched the game against Utah, and I just want to say Utah's left tackle. Do you want to know how big that man is?
Okay, the way you said big, I'm going to pin him at 6'6", 350.
6'8", 350.
Wow. Honestly, for a complete shot in the dark, that wasn't that bad.
You were pretty close. He was 6'8", 350, and he's huge. He looks his size. That's like Daniel Falele's size at tackle. And he did show some struggle against him, although he did have some wins against him. It was kind of even in a sense where the tackle would win some reps and he won some reps. But Utah has a pretty decent offensive line in terms of sack rate percentage. But I just want to bring up the report that people were talking about. And that's the fact that I don't know if you remember this, but apparently one of the scouts said from the Pac-12 that they didn't have the game plan for him or anything and he didn't scare them. Well, I think that's quite honestly bullshit because
a lot of crap.
It's horse shit. It doesn't make any sense because all game long against Utah in the championship game, I saw tight ends and running back chipping him almost every single passing down, whether they had a tight end lined up on that side.
If you're not game planning for KT, if you're a defensive coordinator, you should be fired on the spot.
Right. It's problematic. But I made the observation, though, watching his tape, that he does get a lot of pressures. He He doesn't always convert them to sacks as much as he should, but, and this is word for word what I wrote on my notes, he would produce more in a defense that can generate interior pressure.
Ding, ding, ding.
And the reason because is so many of his rushes were just nullified because the quarterback would just step up in a pocket where the defensive line would not even push the offensive line a yard or two into the backfield. And he had all the room to step up. So if he's a Jet, if you're a quarterback, do you really want to step up into Quinnen Williams and Sheldon Rankins and John Franklin Myers? I don't.
No, sir.
So I think his production would look even better in green and white. I think the ceiling is there. It's high. This is the type of edge rusher the Jets need to go after at number four, because this guy can be a superstar, and I trust Robert Saleh to develop him as he should. Now, just going into my pro comparison, I think you're really going to like my pro comparison.
Yeah, let's hear it.
There's two players, by the way, and you're going to love both of them.
Why do you always have two players? I'm pretty sure that's cheating.
Because this one, I felt like I needed to throw this guy in. You'll see why.
Okay.
But the first name, and I think you're going to like this one the most, I compared him to Terrell Suggs.
Ooh. Okay. I actually, I didn't know if I should go, past players or not. I tried to keep it present because it just opens up a whole can of worms. All right, what's the other one?
So let me just explain Terrell Suggs really quick, just briefly.
Okay.
They have very similar, long, wiry builds. They both are really good at speed rushers. They show power. They're both very effective against the run. And I just see Thibodeau is a very hard player to comp because he's so unique in terms of his athletic profile and his build. But that's the closest I could come with, especially in terms of a throwback. But if you want to go more recent, I went with Khalil Mack, maybe with a little more juice off the edge in terms of speed rush.
I've read Khalil Mack a few times.
I see it. I really do. He's excellent against the run. It's just Khalil Mack doesn't have that speed rush that Thibodeau has. And I think that takes him kind of to the next level. But again, they're similar players in my mind.
Yeah, you know what really interests me? The fact that you mentioned that he causes a lot of pressure. The QB steps up and they, just throw it away and whatever. So it doesn't really get nullified. When I was watching him versus UCLA, I saw him pull off a fake spin move to get to the quarterback. And not even a real spin move. He did a one-quarter spin, stopped, turned, went back inside. It was top three, one of the most ridiculous things I've ever seen.
He did the DeMarcus Ware. When he was in Denver, he did that exact same move. He did a quarter spin and then just continued and rushing right inside. It was one of the most beautiful things I've ever watched in my life.
And it gets better. You know what the QB did? He stepped up and threw it away.
Yeah. That's so many of his excellent speed rush wins just were nullified just because he got pushed around the arc and the QB was able to step up. And that's something, if he was a Jet, would not happen very often. And if it did happen often,
there's a problem.
Yeah, it's a problem. That's kind of a problem if that happens.
All right. So are you ready for my number one?
I know who it is. Yeah, we all know who it is.
Aiden Hutchinson, not only my number one edge rusher, the number one player on my big board right now. 6'6", 260. You know what's really shocking? 10th percentile arm length for him. You don't see it. He has 10th percentile arms. You don't see it. So full disclosure, my girlfriend's a Michigan fan. I'm biased. I watched every Michigan game this year. So I was kind of in on Hutchinson before. But let me put it very simply. This guy is the definition of a dog. I don't want to talk about him for too long because I'm honestly going to get really sad that we can't get him. But he's a dog. This is a guy who last year probably could have been a first rounder. Was a first rounder. Let's be real. He was a first rounder last year. He came back. You don't see many first rounders come back. And he said he came back to beat Ohio State. That's the reason he came back to Michigan this year. He wanted to beat Ohio State. And goddamn, turn on the game of Aiden Hutchinson versus Ohio State. He took over. He had a damn near safety on the first play of the game. He had pressure after pressure. He had three sacks. He just did everything that game. He did everything you could have asked from him and more against Ohio State. And this is Ohio State. We're talking about probably what's considered the best tackle duo in the country. He can line up standing up or hands in the dirt. In my notes, I wrote sad, just the word sad with a period, maybe five or six times, because this guy is just incredible. He has great bend. He beats the tackles inside and out. There's nothing he can't do. So I can't talk about him too much. I might cry. So all year, if you ever watched the Michigan game, the broadcast, they defined Aiden Hutchinson as a long-lost Watt or Bosa brother. That's how they defined him. And, man, I see it. I went with Joey Bosa. They're similar size. They win similar ways. Big Ten guys. It just checks out. Now, you could have gone with any one of those, you know, four Bosa or Watt brothers, and I would have accepted it. But, yeah, Aiden Hutchinson, number one player on my board.
Okay, okay. I mean, I don't know if I'd call him a Bosa, but I guess I went with Joey Bosa there.
I went with the lower Bosa, in my opinion.
The lower Bosa, okay.
I think Nick's better. We're not getting into this.
We're not going to get into this, but
Nick's better than Joey.
Maybe that'll be another episode. But, at number one, I also had Aiden Hutchinson's shocker.
Shocker.
6'6", 260 pounds. He showed some excellent moves. I saw a nice rip move that he used on a couple of wins. He's a versatile rusher. He can rush inside and outside. He's got a quick spin move, high effort and motor. That's always important. I saw him split quite a few double teams with speed off the snap. He can also bull rush. Speed to power is real. It's elite. The thing I also like to see is that, I don't know if you picked up on this watching him, especially, you know, during the games when you would actually watch the game and not watch on film like I did, but
I did watch the film, but
he was communicating almost all the time on defense pre-snap. Like, just look at him. He's waving his arms. He's a big time leader. And that's important. Again, I brought this up quite a few times already. He shows the ability to set up tackles throughout the game. He will repeatedly rush with speed to the outside. And then once it hits the fourth quarter, he will fake hard outside and then cross the face of the tackle inside. And he will win quite a few times just doing that alone. And he also can time the snap really well. And that combination right there is pretty, pretty dangerous. And he also has a pass rush plan in terms of what moves he's going to use. He shows that he just understands how to win over the course of a game. And not a lot of pass rushers do, even though I just said it for the top three edge rushers. But it really isn't all that common. But I saw him stand up. He also had his hand in the dirt. He's very versatile. Doesn't matter where he rushes, honestly. But just there's like very few negatives I have, but I just need to bring him up. He's not a twitchy athlete. He doesn't have length, like Usain already said. And he obviously doesn't win with length because he doesn't have length. And he's not bendy, but he definitely makes up for it in terms of his high level moves. And in terms of a pro comparison, Usain already mentioned this player before, but I comped him to Max Crosby.
I would like to say I have some beef with the whole twitchy athlete thing. Because 70th percentile 40-yard dash, 70th percentile 10-yard split, 80th percentile vertical jump, 99th percentile three-cone drill, 94th percentile 20-yard shuttle. Twitchy athlete, elite athlete.
I think in this case, it comes down to more reactionary than it is athletic ability. Because when I think of an edge rusher that's twitchy, I think of someone who can win immediately inside and then make the tackle on someone who's running outside. Right. Okay. And can his body do it? Sure. But I don't think he can recognize it fast enough and do it. So he's shown some abilities to do it on tape. I saw him do it once. It was really nice play, but he's not someone you want to have in open space trying to take down a ball carrier. Like, he's not that kind of athlete. And that's what I was really going for when I said that he's not twitchy.
Interesting. So there's our top five. Our top three were identical. I had Trayvon Walker and Kingsley Nkbari at 5 and 4. And Joe, you had?
I had Boye Mafe at 5 and Trayvon Walker at 4. Pretty much almost the same.
Very similar.
Yeah.
So there's two really just missed guys I want to mention. One of them is a guy who was like kind of seen as like number three before, and he's kind of fallen out of the favor for people. And I've seen why. George Karlaftis from Purdue. George Karlaftis, he basically, he's new to football. Let's get this straight. Like, he's Greek. He has not played football his whole life. He's a weight room freak, and it shows. he does not really like do pass rush moves. He just wins on pure strength. And right now he's in a position in college where he's good enough to win on pure strength. That's not going to translate to the NFL. He has the strength and the athleticism at the next level to be a good edge rusher. The floor is just too low for me. And he's got arms smaller than Hutch. And that lack of arm length, when you don't have the football IQ that Hutch has, shows up in the run game. And that dude is, I just called Kingsley Nagbari a liability in the run game. Karloftis is a bigger liability.
Yeah, so in terms of my can't miss, before I go into that, I just want to say that George Karloftis, he didn't even make it into my can't miss. Really, I really wasn't all that impressed with his ability to win. It was all power, like you said. He really didn't show any ability to throw in some counter moves. And the thing that really bothered me is that in terms of recognition and football IQ, he really struggled to identify like certain jet sweep plays. And I can even go to the Ohio State game alone where he was the play side edge on the jet sweep to, I'm just going to say JSN.
Garrett Wilson.
No,
it was Garrett Wilson.
No, it was both. No, I'm going to tell you why. I'm going to tell you why. Because earlier in that game, Jackson Smith and Jigba, did I say that right?
Jackson Smith and Jigba.
Yes, number 11. He took a jet sweep. George Karloftis was play side. He was unblocked. And JSN, I'm going to shorten him to JSN. JSN just ran right by him, and George Karloftis was like looking around. He's like, what happened? And that play went for a good chunk. And I thought like, okay, maybe if this happens again later in the game, he'll be able to pick it up. So not even later that quarter, Ohio State did the same exact thing to Garrett Wilson on a jet sweep. Again, George Karloftis was play side. And the same exact thing happened, and except this one went for a touchdown. So in the NFL, in this era where teams are going more horizontal to get players in space, you're seeing a lot more jet sweeps being used, especially with the Rams. The Jets love to use it. The 49ers love to use it. Almost any offense that likes to use West Coast principles and outside zone principles will use it. And he couldn't get the job done. I don't like his floor as a run defender either. A lot of scouting reports out there say he has a high floor as a run defender, but I think he's okay. I don't know how he ranks against Kingsley and Nagbari. He may be a little better, but I don't think it's by much.
That's not a compliment.
Just because of his power that he shows, he can just with power alone, he can stack and shed blocks at times, which can lead to good plays against the run, but I didn't see it consistently enough. So he wasn't in my can't miss even, but the players in my can't miss was Kingsley Nagbari. Hussein talked about him already. Wins with length. He's horrible against the run. you know, just an obvious situational pass rusher. He also has struggled with football IQ in terms of identifying run fits and which gaps he's responsible for. That's a little concerning. So he's really not someone you can even have on first and second down really ever in the NFL when all of the concepts in the run game is only going to get more difficult. So with that said, Kingsley Nagbari, highest PFF pass rushing grade since Myles Garrett. That's all nice and good. I saw some nice hand moves, although I think he needs more work on his technique in terms of pass rush combo moves that you see a lot of the high level edge rushers using. But I think he can get there. He needs a year to either be a situational edge rusher or even redshirt if the team is deep enough where he can do that. But I think he can get there. But another player I have in my can't miss is David Ajabo. I really like David Ajabo. He is just a freak athlete, and he could win in a variety of ways. He's really good using his hands, in my opinion. It's just the injury really, really kills him. And it's not even like he tore his Achilles during the season. He's really not going to be an impact in his rookie season at all.
He's redshirted this year. There's no way around it.
Right. He's essentially a redshirt, and maybe a team will trade into the back end of the first round just so they can get that fifth year on his contract, as opposed to only a 4-year contract if he went in the second round, just because teams will know he has the redshirt. But man, if he didn't get injured, I think he'd be probably 4 or 5 on my list. which is, I think, is a really good sweet spot. And he's a pretty good fit for the Jets, in my opinion. He shows the ability to pin his ears back and get upfield. And I think he'd be a really good fit on this team. It just, it really hurts to see him lose a lot of money just by getting hurt in a pro day.
Yeah, man. First of all, I want to say the only reason I mentioned George Karloftis is because everyone had him as like a top five edge rusher before, like once the season ended and he kind of fell out. I want to explain my reasoning for why. But David Ojabo is the next guy I want to talk about. Like I wrote down the same thing in bold. If he didn't tear his Achilles, he's probably number five on my list right now. I think he's a better fit as a 3-4 outside linebacker than a 4-3 defensive end. And you saw it once again in the Ohio State game. They had him like man up against receivers on the outside. Like he covered Jeremy Rucker down his team. There's one play that made me crack up. He was manned up against Jackson Smith and Jigba on a slant route. That went about as well as you thought it would go.
I remember seeing that too. That did not go well. He looked lost after JSN took one step into a slant.
But the fact that they're willing to do that shows how much they value his raw athleticism and how much they trust him out there. You know, so I think that's big because he's raw. He hasn't played football that long. He's got all the talent in the world. Kind of like Kayvon Thibodeau, he gets a lot of pressures, but he doesn't really turn them into sacks. But what he does is he gets some pressures, and usually the quarterback just walks into the waiting arms of Aiden Hutchinson. He's a great fit. I think he'd be better as a 3-4 outside linebacker, but like you said, he's redshirted this year. Pro day cost him a lot of money, unfortunately. I really like him.
Do you want to hear my pro comp for David Ojabo really quick? I think I nailed this one.
I'd love to hear it.
I comped him to Robert Quinn.
That's great.
I thought it was really good, honestly, because he was raw just like Ojabo was. But Hussein, do you have anything more to add in terms of edge rushers in this class?
No, I think we hit really everything we wanted to. We got all the big points out there. I honestly did not expect us to agree. Like, I thought you would have – the way you talked about Jermaine Johnson early on, I thought he would be 2 and KT would be 3, and this would kind of be a bit of an argument between us. So our top three being identical is kind of interesting.
Yeah, I did not expect that either. I didn't expect Jermaine to drop below Kayvon, but when you do a deep dive in film, that's sometimes you find out different conclusions.
I'd like to say they're 2 and 3 for me. Like, obviously, take them both at 4, either one. Flip a coin. I don't care.
Yeah, honestly, Honestly, I'd lean towards Thibodeau with a higher ceiling, but I think Jermaine Johnson's ceiling is not that much lower than Thibodeau's. Even though a lot of people think his ceiling is low, I tend to disagree, to be honest. But on that note, guys, thanks for listening to this episode. We hope you return and to listen to our future positional draft review podcasts, where we will be doing safeties, right? We're doing safeties next.
We're doing safeties next. That should be fun.
Ooh, going to be definitely a learning curve for me. But safeties are next. We're going to do the top five for that. Expect that sometime next week. But on that note, guys, please like, follow to our Twitter account. That is Revis_Butthead. Enjoy the cover art. I did a great job on that. Not to toot my own horn. But
beautiful.
Thank you guys for listening, and peace out, Jets nerds.
Peace out, homies.